enchanté.
Welcome back, Whitey Tidies, to another Two Tight Ends podcast. I am your co-host, Connor, and with me is a man who has invested almost all of his money in Dogecoin. It's Neil.
Dogecoin Army, baby.
It's not going up, dude. You might want to give it up.
Nah, I'm riding the wave, okay?
You should probably just sell now.
It's at like 0.03 cents right now.
Oh, then Dogecoin to the moon.
No, I think it's actually way less than that. That was some number I pulled out of my ass.
As you with most things.
Oh, it was 0.038.
Close enough. Hey, let's go. Close enough. Well, okay, so speaking of that, Neil, do you want to just give us a breakdown of everything that's going on with the stock market lately?
Yes. For those people who don't know,
who live under a rock, haven't been on the internet in a week and a half,
and keep hearing GameStop everywhere, thought it was dead, so did everybody else. I'll give you a little short breakdown of it, what's going on right now. So pretty much people are driving up the stock prices of GameStop, and it started on Reddit. Reddit found out that this one subreddit called Wall Street Bets, they found out that the GameStop stocks had a lot of shorts on them. Now, a short is pretty much you betting that this stock is going to go down even more. And then if it does, then you hit that bet and you make some money off it, right?
And especially, I just want to put in a caveat there, especially if the company goes bankrupt, which is where GameStop was headed. Mm-hmm.
Correct. And not only on Reddit, these people found out that, or just looked it up, I guess, but they realized that GameStop not only was one of the biggest percentage-wise, one of the biggest shorted stocks on the market, or I think it is the biggest, actually, the most shorts. And not only did that, but they also had more shorts than they had actual stocks. So when Reddit found this out, they started like gaining traction. They started putting it all over the subreddit and like, hey, if we start buying this stock up, driving up the price, right? They also found out that it was this one investor. I think it was a hedge fund, Melvin Capital. I think it is. Something
yeah,
like that.
I believe Melvin Capital, and I believe mm-hmm. it's like Citadel Investments are the two that are like the big ones that everyone talks about.
Yeah, and they are the ones that had a big stake in these shorts. So Reddit was like, well, these big hedge funds are pretty much forcing GameStop to go bankrupt. So what we can do is we can buy a bunch of GameStop, we can hike up the price of the stock, and then not only these hedge funds will have to lose money, because then if they short a stock but then it goes up, you lose money on that because then you have to buy back at what the stock is now. So when they started doing that, some of the shorts started selling back, and then that's hiking it up even more. And so now we're in what's called a short squeeze, which it's skyrocketed the price, and it's pretty much a battle to see who folds first between these investors of GameStop and these hedge funds people who shorted all the stock, who have all the shorts. And that's pretty much where we're at right now. That was a very brief description. If I missed anything, I'm not an expert. Please don't come and attack me.
You're not? What?
But that's a quick brief.
A queef? What?
Queef? A queef lowdown of what's going on right now. And yeah. And so that kind of happened last week, and then because of the popularity of it, some of the you know, retail investing apps started blocking the buying and trading of, not only, this isn't only happening with GameStop, but GameStop is the biggest one. So it's happening with AMC stock, it's happening with BlackBerry, it's happening with Nokia, it's happening with Dogecoin. That's why we mentioned it up top. Well, not the same thing, but anyways,
Dogecoin is a little bit more of a meme than anything else, but yeah, That's exactly right. So basically, everyone noticed all these shorts that were happening, which, I mean, shorts should just be illegal at this point, right? Like, after 2008, yeah. Shouldn't shorts just be illegal? Well, like, why do they still exist?
I was reading, again, on Reddit, that they've had this, or they've had what they call an infinity squeeze.
Uh-huh.
Like, only a couple times before, and the last one was in 2008 with VW stock. And that shot up, that stock, they did a very similar thing, what's happening now, and that stock shot up to over $1,000.
Jeez.
Yeah, and that's why they call it an infinity, because it was even greater, but that's what these guys are actually going for. These people, the people who are buying GameStop right now, they're trying to force the hedge fund people who own the shorts to buy back at an astronomical rate. To pretty much like give it a little middle finger thumb and hopefully make some money off of it too.
Yeah, I mean,
and some people have made already a bunch of money, like the person who kind of set this whole thing off. He goes by the username of Deep Fucking Value, which I hate everybody who starts censoring that. Like every like little video or news thing I saw, everybody's censoring it. I'm like, dude, just say it.
Jeez.
It's his name.
It's his name. It's what he wants to be known by.
Yeah, he kind of set this whole thing off.
Not his slave name, his chosen name.
Yes, his chosen name. What was it? Snowball was my slave name.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the Rick and Morty?
Yeah, something like that. What, yeah. Or, I thought he went by Snowball afterwards because his fur is white and fluffy. White and soft.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
I can't remember, but
right.
Yeah.
So yeah, this guy, Deep Fucking Value, he pretty much set this thing off, and he is, last time I checked, that could be a day late because he gives updates on that subreddit every day. But last time I checked, he had already cashed out on $13 million.
Jeez.
And he still had around $30 million, I think it was, in stocks and options.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
Yeah.
Wow. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't this like start out at like weren't the stocks like $3 a share?
Something? It was like $4.
Yeah, it was something crazy low. And so yeah, when they noticed this, they just all bought it up, which started driving up the price like crazy. And like you said, if you watch like the graph of the price line trend, it like keeps going up and up, and it hits like $30, and that's when a bunch of hedge funds noticed and all sold real quick, and then it drove it up to like $300 a share. So
that drives it up way much, and that's kind of what the squeeze is. That's why they call it a squeeze.
Exactly.
But yeah, dude, this guy, I mean, he's not the only one making money, but like I said, he's kind of the person who, I think he's the like one the that either dog. Noticed it or started it.
Uh-huh.
And he, I think he had, to begin with, I think he had 50,000 stocks. He bought 50,000 at like, you know, the four or whatever. And then he's turned some of that into stock options. Like we were talking about it before. People who don't know, a stock option is pretty much, you're pretty much betting on a stock. But Connor, you want to explain that a little more?
About what?
Stock options.
Yeah. They're options that you have in stocks.
Oh no, the call options,
call options. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, so call options, I actually saw a video on this that was like, it was perfect because it said, explain to me what a call option is like I'm a fifth grader, and I was like, hey, I'm basically a fifth grader, so yeah, this is perfect.
There you go.
So essentially what it is the guy used the example of a hydro flask, where the hydro flask is worth $20, and the guy was like, well, I want to buy that now, but I'm not totally sure if I want to buy that now, so can you put it on hold for me? And he was like, sure, I can put that on hold for you, but there's a hold fee of $2. And so then you hold that for $2, and let's say the price of the hydro flask goes up, and it goes up to $30. Well, what that hold fee does is now you can say, hey, I want that hydro flask now to then turn around and sell, but I only have to pay what the price was when I put that hold fee on. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I hope I explained that right. But yeah, basically it's like you purchase the stock at the, or you want to purchase the stock at a certain price, but you're afraid that it's going to go down or it's going to go up. If it goes down, then you don't ever have to buy it. You just lose money with that holding fee, and that's it. That's the end of the game. But if it decides to go up, and it goes up and up and up, and you're at a point where you think, okay, I want to sell, then you purchase the amount you want at the price that was at that price at that point. And then, and I think maybe you have to declare how many shares you want, probably. I don't know how it works exactly, but anyway, yeah, basically you buy it for the past price so that you can turn around and make an instant profit.
It's also kind of like insurance on that price.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's kind of another way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's almost like it's just like a safer way of betting almost.
But yeah, so that's all going on. Like I said, it's kind of a war between these what the subreddit Wall Street Bets call suits, you know, the Wall Street guys, the corporate elites, versus the retards, which is what they call themselves autists on that
basement subreddit.
Well, they call themselves autists.
Yeah, no, I love it.
They're just like. They're just like, oh, I just bought 200 shares of GameStop. I feel real retarded right now. Like, yes.
That's not very PC, guys.
No, it's really not.
So, yeah, Neil, you mentioned something that I really don't want to gloss over here for a second, though. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the fact that at one point, which I believe it was like Wednesday of this past week or something like that, that Robinhood shut down and a lot of other trading apps shut down. Mm-hmm. Like public trading of like the retail stocks in general, but specifically they were targeting, like you said, GameStop, AMC, BlackBerry, like all these ones that people were driving up so that they could make money off these shorts. And so what's really interesting, which we're going to get into this because I started doing a little bit more digging on just insider trading within like Washington, D.C. When I say Washington, D.C., I mean specifically like Congress and the Senate and just politicians in general. Yeah, exactly. And so this comes from, which this popped up very quickly, it's a subreddit, Class Action Robin Hood, and the title of this
post before we get into this though, yeah. Connor, I do want to mention a few things about the whole blocking of buying and everything.
Oh, so go for it.
So especially Robinhood is probably the biggest retail trader like app. They probably have the most. I saw a stat somewhere. I don't know. I never confirmed it. I mean, I don't think anybody did yet, technically. But I saw a stat somewhere that said half of all Robinhood users had GameStop stock, right? Mm-hmm. So when they shut it down, when they shut down the buying and stuff, it pretty much forced – you could only sell. And they're forcing some people who had margins to sell as well, which – I believe I'm again not an expert, not a lawyer, not an investor or anything. I believe technically it's legal for them to sell a margin because a margin is essentially that person taking out sort of a loan from Robinhood to use to buy stock, and then they have to pay that back. And then so if they're taking a loan, I believe it's legal for them to sell it when they want. Like if it's a volatile stock, they can sell it when they want, kind of.
Right.
So the margin maybe not, but. But forcing, like, there's no buying, there's only selling at that point. It drove the price down, and people were saying, oh, like, the hedge funds were recouping some of their money and stuff. This is all a ploy. And then if you do a little more, I'm not even digging, really. This is pretty public that Robinhood's biggest people are who we mentioned earlier, what, Melvin Capital and what was the other one again?
Citadel, I believe is what it's called.
Citadel. Those are their biggest, like, people who they work with as far as the money goes.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because what's worse is I'm pretty sure Citadel technically owns Robinhood app. I could be wrong about that.
I don't think they own it. I think they're the biggest people who give them money. Pretty much, they give them.
Oh, they're just the capital credit. Behind it. Okay.
Or no,
okay.
They execute the actual trades.
Got That's it. What, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Because like Robinhood doesn't execute the trades. Robinhood sends it to them, and they execute the actual trades.
Got it. Okay, that definitely makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so
but yeah, so this came out that, you know, everybody's talking about this. So a lot of people are getting angry that Robinhood and other like Cash App was forcing it. Webull was down for a few hours, but then came back. Like a lot of different apps were blocking the buying of this. People were getting mad. As I mean, I'm just a lurker. I'm just following this thing, and I think a lot of people are getting mad. Just like, hey, this is a free market. You know, people need to be able to freely trade. But now you're forcing us to either sell or hold it, and then it's driving the price down. And it was kind of it was a mess. Still is a mess. Yeah. Now I do want to mention this though. I watched a video from. Let me pull this up his YouTube. It is Graham Stephan. He's got 2.8 million followers or subscribers on YouTube. And I watched this video yesterday, he was kind of not even playing his devil's advocate. He was just bringing up a point on the opposing side. And it kind of made me think about it a little more, you know, because the initial reaction is sort of like, hey, fuck you, you know, like give like let us trade.
Yeah.
But he was saying like it's possible. Now, he wasn't claiming anything, but he's saying it's possible that because like there were literally just no stocks to buy or they had a very limited supply. So and because those like we mentioned it a second ago, those traders, those retail traders, usually it takes. Actually, behind the scenes, it takes 2 days for that trade to complete. So when Robinhood, when you buy a stock on Robinhood, it takes about 2 days for them to send it out to the Melvin Capital or whatever, and them to execute the trade, make sure everything's good, and then they. But on your app, it's instant, right? Mm-hmm. So he was saying is like it's possible that they didn't have enough, or thought they might not have enough for the weekend because it was I think a Thursday or when it was when they blocked it. So. Then they just like shut it down because they didn't want to mess with this whole mess. Just right. Saying that is an opposing view. I wanted to bring that up just to have that there because that did make me think about it. I still think there's something fishy going on. It's pretty damning what it looks like. But I did want to bring up that opposing view.
So. Okay, so that's actually perfect because this leads me right into this this Reddit post that I was about to read, where this is actually comes from a guy who works for Robinhood and he's. He specifies, he's like, I do low level, like technical stuff. He's a comp science major. He's not a financial guy. Like but he does work for Robinhood directly.
And also Connor, we have to mention that this was found on Reddit, right?
Yes, it was.
So this is some user on Reddit. So take it with a grain of salt.
Exactly. Maybe they're lying. Take it with a grain of salt, but the sincerity in the post does kind of like seem it's there. You know, this doesn't just seem like what they call shit posting, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But what this says is, I'll just read it. It says, Vladimir, yes, founder Vladimir and the C-suite received calls from Sequoia Capital and the White House that pressured them into closing trading on GME, which is GameStop stock. And I guarantee you the same took place at like E-Trade and others who closed trading that same day. And anyway, basically he just pointed out that it's not just within the financial sector anymore that this corruption is coming from. Now the government's getting involved, which I mean we all know is bound to happen. We had the bailouts in 2008, things like that, but the White House directly calling saying to shut down trading, what is that? What are you talking about? Like that is insane. And then okay, so I see that, I start digging a little bit more, and then I see another post. It was a tweet that this guy was saying. Basically, he was just pointing out that now everyone's actually paying attention to the stock markets right now. Like there's all eyeballs are on the stock market, right? Because of all this news going on. He was talking about the fact that the Pelosi's invested over $1 million in Tesla stock the day before Biden announced that they were converting all fleet, like the whole Washington fleet to electric vehicles. Coincidence? I think not. And then I see another post. This is another tweet that this guy put out saying, remember when senators got coronavirus briefings before the public and sold off millions of dollars in stocks before the crash last year and faced no consequences and no regulation? Then Reddit made one stock into a meme and they're talking about restructuring the whole market.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the whole outrage too, is that, oh, now that it's the everyday person, not the, you know, hedge funds that are making the money, now they shut it down and they're trying to put in regulations and all this stuff because it's not the people who usually are winning this time.
Exactly. Like they just got beat at their own game. Like one of my favorite the of all the, you know, memes coming out of this or whatever is people making fun of going back to bagging on the stimulus checks because they have like the quote or whatever where it's like them. It's like, well, you know, $600 is actually quite a bit if you invest it right. And then it's like them, also them. Wait, not like that. But no, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous how all of this is intertwined, and especially within the government. Like even so, Justin Jackson, running back for the Chargers, made a tweet as well that said, "Tell me the difference between Congress members owning stock, then having the power to regulate the stock market, and sports referees betting on games, then having the power to dictate how that game turns out." It's like it's interesting how only one of those is illegal.
Yeah,
But it's so, oh, and then if we're going to talk about even further corruption, let's talk about the tech industry as well, because then we also have this information that Google salvaged Robinhood's one-star rating by deleting nearly 100,000 negative reviews.
Oh yeah, they're getting bombarded. How is that
fair? Yeah, but how is that fair? You're taking away First Amendment rights at that point, where people are sharing their honest opinion and honest views of the Robinhood app at that point. And then Google goes in and salvage. I'm pretty sure Apple did the same thing. I think I heard that Apple did the same thing and took away a bunch of negative reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And maybe, yeah, I mean, to be fair, maybe those opinions aren't totally honest in the moment because everyone's just heated about what's going on. But it's also very, very fishy because it looks like, you know, these big tech industries, you're not siding with the people on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty rough. Now, I think I heard, I'm going to get this quote wrong, and I'm trying to pull it up, but I can't because there's a paywall. But CNBC, I was watching at work, actually. CNBC had Interactive Brokers chairman Thomas Peterffy, whatever his name is.
Uh-huh.
They had him on. And like I said, I was trying to pull up the exact quote. I couldn't pull it up. But he essentially was admitted to trying, like, he was responding to the whole, you know, market being shut down essentially as far as GameStop goes, and he pretty much admitted that he was just trying to protect like the millionaires that were doing it,
right,
and I'm just like, this is so blatant. This is, if we're to believe, again, I do have to put a little asterisk, if we're to believe that this is corruption, which it, like I said, it's pretty damning.
Yeah.
It, like, this is happening right in front of us. This is the biggest example of it. And honestly, I think, like, I'm sure most people have seen the tweets going around. It's literally a unifying issue. Like, AOC is agreeing with Ben Shapiro and
Ted Cruz and yeah, and like, I'm pretty sure also AOC and Donald Trump Jr. were like on the same page at one point.
Yeah, like everybody seems to agree with this. Like, hey, this seems pretty corrupt. This seems at least fishy. What are we doing here?
Interesting, like, that Nancy Pelosi hasn't weighed in on the issue. Very interesting. Weird. Also,
but no, to your whole...
I just found another post that I saved on my phone. Because I was going through my phone, because I saved a bunch of things to make sure that we had some information for this. But I just found where I got the idea that Citadel owns the Robinhood app, because they do. So here's how it works. And this comes from a guy who... I can't see his username on here, but he's one of the guys that's been basically delving out all the, like, updates on what's happening with all of this, and pretty reputable, I guess. But he put
that sentence.
Yeah, he's
pretty reputable, I guess.
I'm saying I guess because I don't actually know him, so okay, I can't. Yeah. I'm saying, again, take it with a grain of salt because I can't speak to it personally. I have seen a lot of posts from him about all of this, so it seems like he's like on the pulse of it all. But this is what he puts: Citadel is a hedge fund that owns Melvin Capital Management. Melvin is a GameStop short seller predicted to lose billions due to people taking the free market back. Citadel owns the app Robinhood. Citadel banned purchases of GameStop shares on Robinhood. Market manipulation. Like, just breaks it all down right there. And then another guy replied to that tweet, said, wait until you see who works at Citadel. The Federal Reserve Chair during the 2008 financial crisis, Ben Bernanke, and he's the current Citadel senior advisor.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So anyway, it all just comes full circle.
Well, that's interesting because, like, to my point that I brought up with that video, like, if there wasn't enough stocks or they're worried about that whole 2-day thing, why didn't they say that then? Like, their excuses were so, like, punitive. Like, they weren't making what they were telling everybody was just not, like, if it was that, then just say it, you know?
No, it was obvious. Obvious what was happening. That it reminds me of, which, okay, I'm gonna hate on LeBron a little bit, but it goes back to the video where someone asked LeBron about flopping. And I'm not saying anyone's gonna admit to flopping, because no one's going to, but the way he responded to that video, LeBron was just like, I don't even know what flopping is. I play a hard game. I don't even know what that is. It was like, dude, like you were one of the biggest culprits of flopping for a long time. Like, chill out. Like, just, you know, don't get all defensive. But like, that's exactly how they sounded. It was like, we're just shutting down the market because people need to reposition reposition their positions. It's like, wait, what?
Chill the fuck out. That's really what they said.
Yeah, basically.
They're just like, come on.
Pretty much.
It's pretty amazing. Man.
Hey, like, all I'm going to say is hold the line, boys. Don't budge. Hold the line.
GameStop to the moon. Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to be monitoring that for a while. Maybe we'll give you some updates if something happens. But yeah, let's get into some sports, Connor. This is a sports podcast.
It is. It's true. That's why I try to bring that in that Justin Jackson tweet, just to bring it a little bit more full circle.
All right, let's talk a little baseball, Connor.
Please.
Because let's just get it out of the way. Because we never do. Nobody likes baseball. Anyways, go ahead.
Well, some interesting news that came out this week was that zero inductees made it into the Baseball Hall of Fame this year. Everyone was just a little short. The closest was...
Connor, yeah, I'm going to need... sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I'm going to need a huge explanation here. I will.
Yes,
this makes no sense to me.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either. But the closest who just barely missed it was Curt Schilling. He was a great pitcher, great right-handed pitcher, who just barely missed out. Because the way it works is, I guess you have to have a certain number of the percentage of votes. So how they describe it in this article is that he finished 16 votes short of the 75% threshold. So you have to, like, obviously it's not unanimous, but you have to get like 75% of the votes from, where was it? They mentioned who.
From all the voters.
Yeah, it's, but I don't want to say voters. It's from like American Association of whatever. Like, there's an official title, but yeah, you're on it. It's a bunch of like reporters and other people who like have been around the game for a while, and so like they all vote, but it has to be a certain number of percentage that you capture from all these votes that determines whether or not you make it in. And the top three basically honorary mentions were Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, and Roger Clemens. And you know, I know Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. And I don't know Curt Schilling's history too well, but Bonds missed out. He got 61.8%. Clemens got 61.6%. I know. Let's see. It says both of them face strong PED suspicions. I don't think there's any suspicions. I'm pretty sure it was like
there's no suspicion with Bonds.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty definite that they were juicing. But I guess, okay, apparently I didn't even know this, that Bonds has also been accused of domestic violence, and Clemens, maintaining a decade-long relationship with a singer who was 15 when they met. So there's some...
Well, this is an interesting question that I just thought of, Connor. The whole debate of, you know, separating the artist from the art, okay? So should a problematic person... say, because, you know, domestic violence or whatever, should they be, you know, because the Baseball Hall of Fame is for baseball. Great baseball players.
Yep.
They were great baseball players. Yep. Now, PEDs aside, should a domestic violence case, or should, you know, that, something like that, should that keep them from the Hall of Fame?
I don't think it should, but it still will, because when you start thinking about the person, who they are, that's still going to come to your mind. Like, because, okay, let's use an example outside of sports. Is Michael Jackson an amazing singer and performer? Yes. Okay, but when you think of Michael Jackson, what do you think of? Diddling little kids. Exactly. So that's the problem, is it's hard to separate the art and the artist, right? So, but I do hear what you're saying, because I kind of agree with you. Like, I don't think their personal lives should really impact whether or not they make it into the Hall of Fame, because it should just be based on what they did on the field. But again, but like we're talking about,
it's stupid to deny that doesn't factor in, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It would be ridiculous to say that it's not factored in. But the thing I have a problem with is Barry Bonds still not being in the Hall of Fame. Now, I get it. Barry Bonds, 100% juiced. It still says suspicion, but, like, he 100% juiced. You look at his rookie year to, like, even like 2 years later, he was huge. But the thing is hitting a baseball as well as Barry Bonds did involves so much more than just strength. Like, and that's what steroids do. They build muscle fast and they give you a lot of testosterone or whatever. I get it. Like, obviously it is a performance enhancing drug where it makes you faster and bigger, faster, stronger. I understand that. But to hit a ball like he does with the hand and the eye, like hand speed, eye coordination, everything, and be able to read off a pitcher, that is something that you cannot get from steroids. And all I'm going to say is there was an interview with Greg Maddux, who is a Hall of Fame pitcher. And when asked about if it was difficult to pitch to Barry Bonds, this is what he said. He was like, Barry Bonds was probably one of the easiest hitters to pitch to because you just walked him. That's straight up what he said, because everyone was scared to face Barry Bonds. So the fact that he got 61.8% of the votes is appalling, in my opinion.
It's the whole, I mean, we've talked about it before on this podcast. It's the whole sort of the old heads loving the unwritten rules and loving the sanctity of baseball.
Exactly. It's America's pastime. It's got to be sacred. It's only for goody two shoes.
Yeah.
No, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Barry Bonds should definitely be in there. I mean, listen, bottom line, he changed baseball. Did he not?
Oh, totally. Like,
he changed baseball. He's huge as in terms of baseball. Maybe they should put a little PED section.
Maybe. Yeah, put an asterisk next to a name. Like, he juiced, but he was still really good.
He was pretty damn good, guys.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that it was zero inductees. Like, how does that even happen?
Exactly. I was so confused when I saw the headline. I did not understand it.
I will have a huge problem with this too, is that apparently further down in the article it mentioned who is eligible to be voted in next year will be people like David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez, you know, people we grew up watching more than like these other guys.
They're gonna get in though.
But like that's the
problem. But A-Rod has PED problems too, didn't he?
He did, and so did Ortiz. Yeah. Ortiz had some PED issues as well. He got suspended, I want to say it was like, was it 2008? Did I read something like that? Mm-hmm. But he had 1 year of suspicion and 1 year he tested positive for PEDs. So like they all do it. This is the point I'm getting across, is the hypocrisy of baseball, where it's like, guys, everyone's doing it, but look at what he did as a player. Like, Barry Bonds was incredible. I don't care if he chewed. I just don't. I don't know.
Now I'd be intrigued to see, I don't know if any tests have been done about this, but like, as far as PED goes, like you're saying, is it just going to give you, now, for a player that maybe isn't that great, you know, doing PEDs, you know, he's hitting the ball in the outfield. Now, all of a sudden, he's hitting home runs. But Barry Bonds was a good hitter before. Like, he was hitting home runs before that.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, it's just the ball is just going to travel farther now.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you can't teach. Well, I mean, you can teach it. But, like, you can't increase someone's ability to, like, hit a slider, for example, or to read a pitcher, or to do any of those things that you have to do in the batter's box with steroids. You're just increasing the chances of hitting it out of the park. That's it.
Mm-hmm. I think, hypothetical here, I think if the Houston Astros, those players that, you know, they're banging on it, if we found out that they did that their like whole career or most of their career, I would be more upset. I think there's more of an argument for them to be kept out.
Exactly. Like
if they were doing that the whole time.
Exactly.
Their whole career. Because I think that's more of an
egregious.
I don't know. I guess that's arguable, but I think that's more of an advantage.
I would agree. Like, yeah, when you
to know what pitch is coming.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly my point, is like Barry Bonds, like there's no evidence or even suspicion that he was cheating in terms of stealing signs. So he didn't know if it was a breaking ball. He didn't know it was a fastball. He didn't know what was coming, but he still hit balls like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So to deny him the Hall of Fame, I think it's garbage. I mean, and plus, like, Pete Rose, like, I'm gonna go back to Pete Rose too. Like, I think just let him in already. Pete Rose served his time.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But let's talk about current baseball, Connor.
Let's.
Some huge trades coming out right now.
Really, just one, but a huge deal. Let me tell you, it is a huge deal. Nolan Arenado is getting dealt to the Cardinals. Let's go. I gotta get a new jersey. I already told Michelle.
Doesn't he still have to clear a few things? Like they still have to do
There is some stuff that's a little unclear of how the deal is going to work out. But dude, this deal is ridiculous. And Rockies fans, I don't know how you're not rioting in the streets right now.
It's honestly Grand Theft Auto. It's like like they stole Arenado pretty much.
They didn't even steal him. The Rockies gave him.
Well, that's the thing. Steal him. Dude, yeah, it's like if I were to go steal, if I were to try to go heist a bank, but then they not only let me heist them, but gave me 50 extra million.
Exactly. Here, you know what? Take 50 million with it. Take 50 million with all that money you just got, all that value you just got. Yeah. And you know what? It's just ridiculous. And it is unclear. It is unclear like what else is going to happen, because there was something about they had to get some approval from MLB to clear some kind of like cap space, something or other, and then they also had to because Arenado in his deal with the Rockies had a no trade clause or whatever, but I think it was reported that he waived that, so he was good to go with it.
So he had to officially waive it for that to go through. Also, I'm reading here that he had to, like, they had to figure out some financial stuff because he had two opt-out deals at the end of 2021 and 2022, and apparently he's retaining them, and then also he's retaining the no trade right as a Cardinal, which is great for him, honestly.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is when you have a talent like Arenado, everyone's like, oh, we'll do whatever you want as long as you come. Like, but
you write the contract, we'll sign it.
Exactly. And the crazy thing too is that he could end up teaming up potentially, because it's unclear if Yadier Molina is still coming back to the Cardinals this year. He's still technically a free agent. There hasn't been any confirmation. Adam Wainwright did come back on like an $8 million deal for like a 1 year, $8 million deal. So they did retain Adam Wainwright, longtime Cardinals pitcher. And but Yadier Molina and Nolan Arenado are actually tied for the most Platinum Glove awards, which is a more recent award that they give out above the, you know, the Golden Glove or whatever. But Arenado already has a ton of those. I think he's like an 8-time Golden Glove, and he's a Silver Slugger and everything. And there is some question of how good he'll actually be in Busch Stadium compared to Coors Field, because I don't know if you knew this, but higher elevation equals longer flight on more baseballs. Yeah. So there's the Coors Field advantage that people aren't too sure if Arenado will translate at Busch, but I think he's going to be fine. Well, and the amazing thing is the Cardinals infield is just insane, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, Paul Goldschmidt is over on first base, who they got, they signed, he was in the Diamondbacks, and then they signed him a couple years ago. And then they've got Colton Wong and Paul DeJong at second and short, and Paul DeJong is also a Golden Glove or winner. I'm pretty sure Colton Wong is too. And then you got Arenado at third. Like, their infield is going to be dangerous.
Yeah. No, I Cardinals fan, I'm jealous, honestly. Like, this is amazing. And I have a couple tweets here I wanted to share. Both of them are from Patrick Lyons on Twitter. I don't really know who that is, but anyways, I just saw it. I thought it was funny. One of them says, the saddest part about the return package for Nolan Arenado is that none of the top 100 prospect lists will need to be updated to reflect the Rockies' new crop of young players.
It's true though.
And then another one says, and this is again, it's a Patrick Lyons tweet, but he's quoting Jim Bowden, GM on Twitter, who is a former MLB GM and executive of the year and now MLB analyst. Apparently his quote says, if the initial reports are accurate, this is one of the most lopsided trades in baseball history. It will go down in history as one of the worst trades ever made by an MLB team on behalf of the Rockies. It's almost unfathomable.
It honestly is insane. And actually, so I have a buddy from my time at the Owls, Skyler. Shout out Skyler. He is a huge Rockies fan from Colorado, obviously. And he sent us a video in this group chat I have with some other guys that I worked with at the Owls. And he was like, this is just, I'm able to laugh through the pain. This one was pretty good. It was some Twitter post where it was the episode of SpongeBob where SpongeBob had started Pretty Patties, and it was a huge success. And Mr. Krabs is watching this on the news, and they're like, so what are you doing with all the money? He's like, well, we honestly didn't know what to do with the money at first, so we started burning it. Also, I was like, but then we just started giving it away, and they had the Rockies GM's name over SpongeBob in the video. I was like, honestly, we just started giving it away.
Hey, I just saw some news on Twitter 39 minutes ago. Some guy, was it Frank Kirchmeyer? Let's see, he's unretired. He's some guy on Twitter, okay? He's saying that it looks like Yadi Molina is signing a 1 year.
He's credible, probably, right?
Yeah, probably.
Or reputable. He's reputable, most likely.
Very reputable. But
oh, so he's saying Molina's most likely signing a 1 year deal, though?
Yeah, he said he's going to sign one in the next few days.
Sweet. Good news for Cardinals fans.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy because I guess, I don't know, I don't have the whole trade right in front of me, but they're sending a number of prospects over. Again, apparently none of them in the top like 100 prospect list. Uh-huh. And then are they sending picks? I can't remember.
From the last bit of research I did, there was like no clear deal of what was happening. There was no clear exchange.
So as far as I know, there's players and the Rockies are also $70-50 million.
Yeah, the reason it also looks so bad is because at this point, literally the trade is Arenado plus $50 million is going to the Cardinals for nothing. That's what it looks like at this point. Yeah, at this point, that's what it looks like. But like, that's not what's going to happen. Obviously, they're going to get something back in return. So we're just waiting to see what the deal is, like what the details become.
It's insane. Cardinals get better. I mean, they're in the playoffs almost every year, and they're just getting better now.
Yeah, they finished second in NL Central last year, and then they had to go against the Padres in the first round of the playoffs. So that was not fun. But hey, all I know is I'm pretty sure I'm gonna get
if not the best third baseman in baseball, right?
Yeah, exactly. He is the best third baseman. But yeah, and he's just only getting better. It's actually kind of crazy because someone was talking about how, you know, the Cardinals are just getting another player in their acquiring another player in their prime, just like they did with Mark McGwire. And Arenado's 29, but it's baseball, so like you can play baseball forever.
I was going to mention Molina. I can't believe he's still doing it, dude. I looked it up. He's like 38 now.
Uh-huh. And Wainwright's like pushing 40, I think, or close to it.
Yeah, that's true. Wainwright's been there.
Wainwright won a championship in, what was it? It was like 2004. Oh, man, I'm gonna mess up the year. But the Cardinals won a championship in like the early, mid-2000s, like when Albert Pujols won a championship with them. And then they won again in 2012. And Adam Wainwright was on both of those teams, and he's still on the Cardinals.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's our baseball news for the day.
Hey, all I know is I'm getting a powder blue Arenado Cardinals jersey, so I'm stoked.
Whatever, dude.
Shut up. Whatever, you have Soto, man. You're fine.
Soto's he's great. I love him. I actually am getting excited for baseball season. It's slowly creeping up.
Slowly but surely. Yeah, we're about 2 months from opening day, typically.
Yeah. No spring ball, I guess, right? Like,
I don't know. I don't know how they're gonna handle it with COVID because last year COVID hit they were doing spring training and they had to shut it down, and then it all got delayed because of COVID, and then they reopened, and then MLB was kind of
it sucks.
It was crazy.
So obviously the spring ball, most of them happen here in Arizona where I live.
Yep.
And everybody I talked to was just like, it's the best time of the year. Everybody, because there's a bunch of stadiums around. Mm-hmm. Everybody just like goes have a great time at the parks. Tickets are usually super cheap. Like, it's just a great time of the year apparently around here. And everybody's into it. And so I missed out on that last year.
This year too. I'm honestly super jealous of Arizona and Florida. Cause spring ball sounds super fun. Cause you get to see the guys, you know, the starters basically, like they're just practicing and they don't play a full game, but like you get to watch them for next to nothing for tickets. Like, it's smaller stadiums too. So it's a little more intimate.
Well, if people don't know, I mean, if you've never been minor league baseball, minor league in general, but minor league baseball is great to go out. The tickets are cheap, food is cheap, and you can go see like a baseball game for a fun time. Like, if you have one near you, I would highly recommend that when it comes back.
Yes, always always advocating for minor league baseball.
And so that's kind of like minor league baseball, except now you have like the Stars playing.
Exactly.
Like, it's that vibe, but with the Stars.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's great. But dude, let's move on to some NFL news now. I mean, I don't even know where we left off, but Deshaun Watson is apparently out of the door now.
He's pretty much gone.
He's everything but traded so far.
Well, where we're at is that the Texans hired Devin Culley? I can't remember his first name, but the assistant coach, whatever, from the Ravens. And
then news came out shortly after that he's definitely done.
Yeah, pretty much. It was like the news came out, and then it was confirmed Deshaun Watson has re-requested his trade or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And a little tidbit here, he's actually taken out like Texans from his bio on Twitter and Instagram.
Ooh, wow. That's the millennial way to handle things. Start unfollowing, mm-hmm. start taking it out of your social media.
Yeah. Oh, he starts following like the head coach of one of the teams he wants to go to, like only
just like a little, just deletes everyone else but only follows them.
Yeah, he's only following yeah. So apparently, I mean, Nick Caserio, the new GM, he said, obviously, I mean, that's kind of what you have to do, that's kind of expected, but he said, we have zero interest in trading the player, talking about Deshaun Watson. But if we're to believe all the reports, and I don't think all these reports would come out if there was any question, you know, like I feel like there would be more conflicting reports if it was actually conflicted, or if there was a chance that he would stay. Like I just think because there's so many reports, I really think he's got to be on the way. He's on the way out.
Yeah. Typically where there's smoke, there's fire. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And if we're to believe all these reports, then yeah. And I mean, like, the thing is, we have reputable sources saying this, like Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport. And so it's like, I tend to believe these guys, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. So I really like this question, though, from Brent. Shout out, best producer in the world. He posed this that I thought would be interesting to discuss. He said, if you were the Jags GM, would you trade the number one overall pick for Deshaun Watson? Thoughts?
That's
it's a loaded question, huh?
Well, the number one pick this year is going to be Trevor Lawrence. Yep. I think that makes it easier decision. Or no, I think that makes it a harder decision. If you're sold on a Trevor Lawrence, then I think you take the pick. But if you're not sold on a Trevor Lawrence, which apparently everybody is, but if you're not, or whoever's there, like say this is a different year, then I think, yeah, you do make that trade.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I mean, I feel bad for Gardner Minshew, man. He was doing actually pretty well. And then, I don't know.
He's doing all right, yeah.
He's doing all right. I mean, he was injured. Doing really well at one point. And then
he was doing pretty good at manning the terrible ship that was sinking.
Exactly. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's like, okay, do you go with the already, like, you know, somewhat established quarterback? Like, he's had some time in the league and he's got some reps in and obviously proven himself to be a great franchise quarterback. Or do you take the newbie who you can kind of mold and shape in your own way? Both played at Clemson, so that's kind of cool, because Trevor Lawrence coming out of Clemson, Deshaun Watson won a championship at Clemson, so kind of sweet. But yeah, I think the timeline of the
Jags, though, kind of fits Lawrence a little more, you know, because if you go trade for Watson, you're going to have to make some winning moves after that. But exactly. They just had a new coach. They traded away all their players in the last couple of years. Like, they're going to have they're in a rebuild. So I guess
that's kind of what I was thinking, too. They're like in full reset mode.
Yeah. So we're talking about Jags right this moment. I don't know. I think you take Lawrence and hope to build the team around him, and that timeline fits a little better. Not that, I mean, Deshaun Watson's young. What is he, 25, 26?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, he's really young still.
But still, I think, I mean, you're trying, if you get Watson, you're trying to win right now. Yeah, he's 25. Holy crap. Barely a year older than me. That's crazy.
I know, I totally agree with you, because if you're trying to go for Watson, you're trying to bring him onto a team that's already kind of established and already has some weapons and some threats that he can use to then turn you into a championship team like now. But yeah,
that's
like
why
the
Jags,
why
I don't understand,
don't have
his
anything.
Interest if we're again if we're to believe the reports, that's why I don't understand his interest in the Jets, because
yeah, I don't
they
know
just
either.
Hired a new I guess he loves that coach, the Robert Saleh,
true
probably, but like they've traded away all their players. They're in a rebuild right now. It's not going to be easy to do a retool or anything. Like,
to be
really
fair,
have any prospects.
To be fair, does Deshaun Watson have a savior complex though? Maybe he's like looking at it as this opportunity to go in there and like, you know, like where it's kind of like the Browns have been for so many years, where it's like no one can get the job done. That's how the Jets have been. It's like, oh, it just seems like no one can go in and get the job done. And Watson wants to like be that guy. He wants to be the guy known as the one who like revived the Jets.
That would be a serious complex right there.
Hey, I'm just saying it could be a thing.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not.
It's a hard maybe.
That would be weird from him. But yeah, like I mean, I guess that's the only way it kind of makes sense in my eyes. Because like, Watson, you probably want to win now, or I guess maybe you won't take a year off, but like, you know, okay, well this year we're not going to be great. You know, I'll try to get us 7-8 wins. We'll see if that happens, and then we'll see. But even then, I don't know, man.
Yeah, but he's got no one in New York. So, but I mean, okay. And also on top of that, you mentioned it before. New York is still a destination. You know, it's still a destination landing spot for people. Even heck, the Giants suck too right now. So like, but people will still want to go live in Manhattan.
Apparently, I've heard I saw some tweets like Giants fan are saying like, oh, Daniel Jones and a couple of firsts will get Watson, and we're like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, right.
But no, that's interesting. Obviously, we'll have to record an emergency podcast if Deshaun Watson gets traded. No, I'm just kidding. but you know who did get traded? The first domino to fall is Matthew Stafford. He was traded, I believe this came out last night.
Mm-hmm.
He got dealt to the Los Angeles Rams in exchange for 2 first round picks, a 3rd round pick, and Jared Goff, a former first round pick, just saying. What are your thoughts, Connor? What's your initial reaction here?
My initial reaction was that LA got hosed, honestly. Because not that Matthew Stafford isn't a great quarterback. I'll never say that. Matthew Stafford is a great quarterback. He's just been like drowning in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little odd that they gave up so much for him, where he hasn't really... I don't know. I felt like Matt Stafford hasn't proven himself enough to be 3 picks, including 2 first rounders, plus a former first round pick. That just seemed like a lot for him. Now, I did do a little bit of research.
I think you should look at the former first round pick as what he is right now. You
know? No, I agree. Yeah, you look at where Jared Goff was to where he is now. Jared Goff got a lot better too. I mean, he did just lead them to a Super Bowl. Not a win, obviously, but he took them to the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Mm.
So, or was it last year?
They scored, what, 3 points?
No. Whoa. What year was that? Wow, I'm losing it. Anyway.
To the point of him being a first-round pick, right? Here's an interesting thing. So, Jared Goff was the Rams' last first-round pick in 2016.
Uh-huh.
Because since then, they've traded away their next 7 first-round picks. Jeez. Including the 2 that they just traded away. They've traded 2017 to the Titans, 2018 to the Pats, 2019 to the Falcons, 2020 to the Jags, 2021 to the Jags, and 2022, 2023 to the Lions.
Why do they hate first round picks so much?
Well, they're trying to get rid of all these. You know, that Super Bowl team, a bunch of those players that they either traded away or they traded for and everything, like they've been wheeling and dealing a lot.
Yeah, it's true. But anyway, when you said my initial reaction, though, that was my initial reaction. But I looked into the deal a little bit more, and especially I did more research on the salaries. They actually have pretty similar salaries, except for Stafford is like a year further into his deal than Goff is. So if they're paying Goff what they promised him, they still owed him. Like, I want to say it was like 4 years, and his total that he was supposed to be getting was like, what was it? It was something like crazy astronomical. I'm going to look it up again real quick. But anyway, my point being is they just took a year off of that. So let's see, the total was $134 million was the total over 4 years, I believe. And anyway, Stafford had a pretty similar contract. I believe it was like $135 million. It was like just barely more for 5 years. But Stafford was already 2 years into his deal. Goff was only 1 year into his deal. So now they've just taken a year off of like having to pay someone. So, I mean, that's in true. That sense, they do win there. And then also we were chatting in the Discord last night. Brent was putting in some input, which I liked what he said. Is just Stafford just has a better arm. And with Goff, the offense just wasn't as like explosive with him. So I'm excited to see what Stafford can do.
Well, here's the thing, Connor. I got some stats for you defending Stafford here. Okay. So Pro Football Focus, their passing grades since 2017, Matthew Stafford is 10th at 84.7. Jared Goff is 13th at 81.6. Now, since 2011, Connor, Stafford has thrown over 4,000 yards in all but two seasons. And the two seasons that he didn't throw 4,000, one of them he threw 3,700, and the other one he was injured half the year.
Okay, fair.
So, and those are, I mean, granted, some of those he had Megatron, but the rest, yeah, like, pretty bad teams for the most part. He won 11 games once, 10 games once, and then the rest of them were 9 or less, you know, like, yeah, most of them. Like, pretty bad teams for the most part, and he was still slaying it.
Right. Sorry, you finish and then I'll.
Well, I was just gonna say, and now he's in this, you know, offensive minded Sean McVay. He loves, you know, dialing up random thing, and I just think this is a perfect match for him.
No, and apparently I totally agree with you, and that was my point. Was my initial reaction was LA got hosed, and I it just seems weird that they gave up so much, but the thing is again, what I was saying before, Matthew Stafford is a great quarterback. He was just drowning in Detroit. He was just, was not getting the help he needed.
Yeah. Agreed. Dude, in 2011, 5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns.
Jeez,
dude, that's crazy. I mean, even this year, he dropped 4,000 yards, 26 TDs. Like, yeah. No, I'm jealous. I wanted him on the Washington football team. This is kind of weird. Like, Los Angeles Rams, apparently they weren't even rumored to be part of the deal, like part of the, you know, interested teams until like the 11th hour.
That's kind of how LA teams do it though, don't you think? Like
sometimes, yeah. But apparently I shout out to Varsity Connor. I think we were talking in a Discord last night. He was saying that he saw a report that said that Matthew Stafford's wife was a big, like, she apparently really wanted to go to LA.
Who doesn't? Of course she did.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, hey, so a big family decision there too. I think this is, but here's my other thing. Detroit, what they got for Stafford, I think this is kind of a win for both teams, because you get a Jared Goff who's not going to be great, but he'll probably be a good stopgap QB for one, maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll be there. He'll be able to compete a little bit, you know, maybe with some games. And then you kind of build around their new head coach, you kind of start building around this. And then, you know, next year or the year after that, if you pick a QB, because I don't think they have a very high pick. I think it's top 10, but I don't think it's very high this year.
Yeah.
And so if they're not sold on one of the other people who aren't Trevor Lawrence, other QBs that aren't Trevor Lawrence, like, yeah, you just have Jared Goff play a little bit, wait until next year, get a guy you want, and now you have even more draft capital in the next few years too. Yeah. I think it's pretty good.
No,
as far as giving up your franchise QB.
Yeah, no, totally. It was actually a pretty good win-win for both teams. But again, you asked for initial reaction. That was my initial reaction. Yeah. But I've come to see the light a little bit. I'm excited I'm kind of excited to see how this pans out both sides.
Yeah, and like, I think we mentioned it in you, me, and Brent talking last night. Like, when Brent and I were talking about the possibility of him coming to Washington football team, we were thinking, you know, one first rounder, two first rounders, maybe a second in there, and Stafford to get him. And this is way more than that. Like, I think this is better than that. And so apparently, yeah, like, apparently I was surprised on the haul that they got. when it came out, you know, because yeah. in my head I was thinking around that.
Yeah, I was too. And I'm really interested to see what happens with Deshaun Watson, like even more interested because, I mean, Matt Stafford has like proven himself. You've read out the mm-hmm. stat lines. You've shown like he can wheel it and deal it. But like Deshaun Watson, obviously he's proven himself too, but he's also a younger talent, an up and coming star on the rise even more. So I'm interested to see the deal that eventually kind of captures him.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little scared on how much Watson's gonna get.
Like, you think so?
Well, because again, I'm hopeful Washington football team is at least in the conversation there. But I don't know if we want to give up that much, you know, because we still have some holes on the offensive side and stuff like that, you know. So I don't want to give up our future like we did with RG3 and get it, and you know, but then again, you get Watson, so I'm conflicted there. But that's what I'm thinking in terms of my own team. So I'm sure other fans are like that too. Do we give up too much? Are we going to give up, you know, 4 first round picks for him? And like,
right. No, yeah. I feel you, because honestly, now I'm just fantasizing because I'm like, oh wow, I just got Arenado to go to my team. Could you imagine if the Panthers pick up Watson now?
Apparently they're coming out in reports that it's a bigger contender now.
Yeah, that's what I heard, is that they're very interested. They'll probably get rid of Teddy Bridgewater, even though they just got him, and then give up a bunch of picks probably, and
mm-hmm. maybe. But that's the thing with you guys. Player. I mean, you guys got some holes too, and. You know, are you tying your franchise away? I don't know. It's conflicting.
That's it. It's like, no, we totally have some holes, but I feel like
But at the same time, if Watson is available, you go get him, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. It's like, Watson's available. Like, you're going for him. But, like, I feel like if we're – let's just compare our teams for a second. I feel like we have less holes on the offensive side than Washington does, but you guys have less holes on the defensive side than we do. So yeah, at this point we have the more established offense, so that's why I could see it working a little bit better in Carolina.
Yeah, maybe. I think me personally that either of those teams are better suited for Watson than the Jets.
Oh, 100,000%.
Maybe it's that New York. Maybe it's that New York, baby. That's all he wants.
Hey, Charlotte's great, all right? And so is DC. Those are great areas. So
it's a great. They're not New York though.
They're not New York.
They're not New York.
Frank Sinatra did not sing about DC.
All right, man. Well, next week is the Super Bowl, Connor. I'm super excited.
Very excited.
I'm thinking about putting a bunch of money on it. We'll see. There's a bunch of props.
Are you going to sell your Dogecoin and put it on the Super Bowl?
All my Dogecoin, all $3 I have in Dogecoin, I'm putting in there. I was on Discord chat with Varsity Connor and our friend Ben last night. We were talking about some of the halftime or some of the Super Bowl prop bets. And like, there was a bunch of halftime stuff, like how many songs is The Weeknd going to play? How long is the national anthem going to be? Like stuff like that. Dude, there's also a bet on which team is going to win the Puppy Bowl.
Dude, honestly, when I see the crazy amount of bets that happen on the Super Bowl, this is when you really see like how much of an addiction gambling is, because you have like,
well, dude, they're crazy. Is Ariana Grande going to make an appearance? Is Bella Hadid going to make an appearance on the halftime show? Is The Weeknd going to talk about Trump? Is the broadcast going to talk about Trump? Like, dude, there's so many, and I love it.
It's wild. It is wild. Like, even when you're betting on a coin flip, you know you have a problem. Like,
there was one speaking about the Puppy Bowl, there was, who is the Puppy Bowl winner going to be, a female or male? There was a bet.
Oh my
on that.
Gosh, stop. I can't. Like, if people who are actually putting money in that need help.
Like me.
Yes.
So yeah, let's get to our predictions here. We have the Kansas City Chiefs, the reigning Super Bowl winners, going up against Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it's in Tampa, by the way, which I believe the first time this has ever happened. You know, a home team is playing, the team is playing in their home stadium for the Super Bowl. Another thing Tom Brady accomplished, Jesus Christ.
Please just retire already.
Dude, the Bucks, I mean, I think what on our predictions for before when the Bucks were like before the Bucks played the Packers, our predictions, I was kind of mentioning how the defense is pretty good, but like they were lacking. I mean, I kind of go back now and I look at how they're trending, and the defense is playing great and great right now. They're playing pretty good the whole season, up and down a little bit, but like right now they're peaking, and as they should be. Like,
yeah,
it's, so I was impressed by the defense against the Packers. I really thought Packers were gonna win that one.
Same. Well, that's I mean that's what we talked about, is like the only way that the only way Tampa Bay was gonna have a shot was you have to stop Aaron Rodgers. Like the defense has to show up, and they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they stopped the run game, and they made it one-dimensional too.
Exactly. Which
they do have the best run defense in the league, but that doesn't really matter when you're going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, right?
No, it does not, because they have everything.
They have anything you want.
Anything and everything. That doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's but yeah, like Bruce Arians, Andy Reid, this has got so many storylines. Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes.
New head versus old head. Yep. I'm here for it.
Who do you want to win, and does that differ to who do you think is going to win, Connor?
Who I want, Chiefs. Who I think, still Chiefs. I'm really? I'm going all in on Chiefs. Yep.
Man, that is. Hold on, I'm going to look up the line. I should have looked it up already. Super Bowl.
While you're doing that, though, I saw this that I thought was pretty interesting, just because it's such a wild ride to think about where these two players had come from. But it was like Steelers fans, right? It was like a meme. It was like Steelers fans right now seeing Le'Veon and Antonio Brown both go to the Super Bowl. But I was like, that's such a wild ride where like Le'Veon's not even the starting running back on the Chiefs, and Antonio Brown, we all know the wild adventures he went through to get to where he's at now.
I don't know how to pick this. This is so hard, man. I think it looks like in most places the Chiefs are at -3.
Jeez.
Yeah, that is nothing.
They are neck and neck.
And the over-under for the points scored, a total in the game, is 56. Because the last two times Brady and Mahomes matched up, they, you know, the first time they put on, 50 each or something like that? And then...
Yeah.
The last time it was like 38 to 40 or something like that. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's going to be wild.
I think the Chiefs will win.
I do too.
And I kind of want the Chiefs to win. But here's the thing. I mentioned it in before the season started, I think, that how like since Tom Brady left the Patriots, I'm kind of rooting for, you know, I'm kind of liking him now a little more. I'm kind of rooting for him a little more now.
I mean, it would hate him as much.
So, well, that's I'm saying my opinion, but so I kind of always love the Bucks. Like I love their like as a casual fan, I'm just like I like their uniforms. I've always liked their teams that they put together.
Okay, that's
the
fair.
Super Bowl team back in the day.
Yeah,
was fun. I don't know, man.
Here's
I don't know if they if say. They were to wear the throwback uniforms from back in the day with the Buccaneer on it, I would say Bucks by 100.
They have to, right? Now that, with leather helmets and everything, now they have to.
Yeah. But no, for real, I think the Chiefs are going to win. I think the Chiefs are going to win by 7.
Oof.
I think they'll do enough to do... I think this might be a shootout. Kind of.
I think it's definitely going to be a shootout.
Man, I mean, dude, Tom Brady went through 3 picks against Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah.
2 picks, 3 picks, and they still found a way to win.
Yep.
I don't. Yeah. Okay, but I'm picking Chiefs.
I don't understand. I'm picking Chiefs, and I'm going to say it's going to be a little tighter. And I'm going to say just from weird, like, I don't know, field goals and everything else, I'm going to say the Chiefs win by like 5. Something crazy, like where it's going to come down to like a, it's going to come down to
safety.
I don't know. It's going to come down to like a possession. Maybe not 5. What did I say? 5. Like 3. I think it's going to come down to like a possession, basically, where it's like you could go and tie it, or you can just like run it down and try to win.
This is the storylines are setting it up for Patrick Mahomes and or Tom Brady to have a game winning drive as time expires. You know, like that's if that doesn't happen, it's going to be a little disappointing.
Yeah,
but. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun one.
Part of me, though, part of me wants Tom Brady to win because I feel like if he wins, he'll just retire and he'll just be out of our lives forever.
So just rip the Band-Aid off.
And yeah, retire, just rip it off. Like, you know what? Just give him that last ring and just get him out of here.
Dude, if Mahomes does win, though, the implications, man. He's only, what, 25-2? And yeah, he's won. If he wins, he would have won twice.
Back-to-back.
Super Bowl MVP last year.
He'll probably win Super Bowl MVP again. If
maybe this year.
Most likely. And then he's already a league MVP.
Like, I mean, that's just like setting up a dynasty, right? Like, is he going to be the next 100%. Tom Brady?
I mean, possibly. I mean, we talked about it. Tom Brady is like, you know, the Michael Jordan of football. And then you said, oh, and then you got the new guy, Patrick Mahomes. Now he's got to go through a Patrick Mahomes. I was like, he's like the LeBron. He's the newcomer, right? Yeah. Or maybe the Kobe. Like, you can compare it to a lot of things like that.
Man, that's crazy. I think this is going to be awesome. I think because both defenses are playing well, I think they match up somewhat evenly. Like, they both have loaded offenses. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and yeah, and like you said, the defenses, I mean, because I was about to say, like, oh, I feel like the Chiefs defense is just like a hair better than the Bucks, but I don't even know at this point. Like, their defenses are pretty evenly matched, and they've all got, I would only say I feel like the Chiefs run game is a little stronger than the Bucks, mm-hmm. but not by much.
I think it really comes down to who's going to get more pressure on the QB.
Yes.
Especially if the Chiefs can get pressure on Tom Brady, because he's not as mobile. You know, yes, he's good at moving around in the pocket.
Yep.
But if he's getting frustrated,
if they collapse the pocket, pressure, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've got to keep collapsing the pocket on
but
Brady.
But that's kind of like what Tampa Bay did against Aaron Rodgers, is they were pressuring him. They sacked him a bunch. Like, if they can get that to Mahomes, man. But Mahomes is really good at improvising. He's really good at making shit come out of his, you know, friggin' ass and
throwing it down the field. He can't do it the whole game, though, you know?
No, exactly.
So, I don't know. It's going to be great. I'm excited.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's move on to some NBA news before we wrap up a little bit. So, I just want to bring this up real quick. Bradley Beal, he deserves better.
He does.
Bradley Beal, as a Wizards fan, I'm sorry.
Bradley, if you're listening,
I am so sorry. I sent you a stat the other day.
Yep.
That said, I believe it said Bradley Beal has the most 40 plus point games in losses in NBA history, which was at 10, I believe.
Yeah. And that was ahead of, like,
Wilt Chamberlain's on that list like three times.
I was about to say that was ahead of guys like Wilt Chamberlain and someone else in black and white.
Yeah. Like, that stat makes me mad. The Wizards are atrocious right now. Everyone should get fired. I've said it multiple times to my friends. It's like, he is our franchise, Bradley Beal, especially now that John Wall's gone. But even before then, I feel like he was the guy now. But he's the franchise. I don't want him to leave because I don't have faith in our front office to get a good deal done. Like, I don't think we're going to recoup what we deserve, what his value is. But at the same time, if he goes out and requests a trade tomorrow, can I blame the guy?
Like, not even a little bit.
Because of, you know, they were off for 2 weeks or whatever for the COVID and everything. Because of that, and they suck. They're last in the league. They have 3 wins. They're 3-12. They're losing every game, even though Bradley Beal is putting up another amazing season. Man, I don't know what to do with them, but let's just move on. Let's not think about it anymore. Let's talk about some happy stuff, right, Connor?
Hold on. Before we move on, I wanted to get your thoughts on some comments made by John Wall, speaking of which, after the Rockets beat the Wizards.
Yeah, I was. Do you have the quote in front of you?
I don't have the exact quote, but the gist of it was he said he felt like they were done with him, and they gave up on him, or they were done with him. And so, like, I want to know what your thoughts are on that, because now, from an outsider's perspective, where I don't pay attention as much to Wizards news, obviously, as you do. I'm focused on my teams, whatever. But from just an outsider's perspective, it didn't look like they were done or they'd given up on him. From the outside, it looked like they were really still, like, having faith he was going to come back fully healthy and in full form, and then he left.
Well, that's kind of what my initial reaction was. As a fan, I'm kind of hurt because most fans were waiting for him to come back. But then I thought about it more, and I hope and I think he was talking about like the front office, and right. There must have been something going on behind the scenes, because the fans, at least the majority, at least people I talked to, like, they had not given up. They were super excited to see him back. Like, he is, John Wall still is DC forever. Like, he is the best thing that happened to DC in 20 years, probably, as far as basketball goes, you know? So, right. Like, he, as far as the fans are concerned, we never gave up on him. He was great. So I was a little hurt, but then I thought about it. I'm like, okay, he must be talking about some front office issue that didn't really come to light.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I figured. But yeah, when I read that, though, I was like, man, I'm like hurt for you, because I knew how excited you were. And I knew from talking to you, like, that was pretty much everyone's sentiment, was like, oh, man, I can't wait for John Wall to come back. I really hope he's like in full form. Like, it's going to be amazing. And then he just dipped.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It must be a front office thing. I think he knows. But like I said, let's move on to some brighter news there. Let's talk about the Jazz, Connor.
Let's.
Are they the best team in the league? Right now, they are number one in the Western Conference. I think they have the best record overall. They do.
Yep.
They're the best record overall at 15-4. They're on a 11-game win streak. Are they the best team in the league, Connor?
I don't know if I would say best team in the league, but they are
right now.
Oh, Connor, right now. Yes. Right now they're the best team in the league. And this is my point of why they're the best team in the league, because some people might argue that Donovan Mitchell is kind of like carrying that team. And he's like, I mean, he is like the heart of that team, and that without him, they can't win, but he's been out for two games. Fun fact. Mm-hmm. So he's been out for two games and they're still winning.
Yeah, last night they played the Mavs. Bogdanovich had 32 points. Yep. Like Mike Conley, like we've talked about his resurgence of late.
Yep.
He had 9 assists last night. Like they're 11 wins in a row. I do have to point out, in those 11 wins, I would call 2 of them quality. the two, they've won back-to-back against the Mavs. Those are good wins. Mavs are not an easy team. They've won against the Warriors. And then the quality wins I'm talking about, though, against the Nuggets and the Bucks. The rest of the team, like, again, no shade to the other teams, but it's like the Cavs, the Hawks, the Wizards, the Pelicans, the Knicks. I mean,
hey, Cavs beat the Nets, who are number 2 in the East. So, I mean, you were the one saying the Cavs are looking pretty good this year. Quote from Neil.
That was in comparison to last year, but I just wanted to point that out, that it's not been the best of quality of opponents, but great teams win against great opponents and bad, right? They win about against both. You have to win against these bad teams. And again, not all of them are bad. I didn't want to, there, it wasn't the worst win streak ever. And a win streak's a win streak, right? Who cares?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't need you throwing shade at my Jazz, right?
No, I don't. That's why I'm saying, like, I don't think they're the best team in the league, but they are on fire right now. I have to bring up the stat. Shout out Brent, best producer in the world. He sent this to me on Twitter. It's from NBA.com/stats. The Jazz have made 319 threes through 19 games. And that's the most ever by any team through 19 games. They've also made 20 plus threes in 7 games this month. The most games with 7 plus threes in a single month in NBA history. They are on fire.
They're right just now. Lighting it up.
Yeah, and they were climbing the standings. I think they were like came from like 6th all the way up to 1st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it. I feel like we talked about it before the season really started, or maybe it was like right out like our way too early predictions or something like that. But, you know, we talked about the fact that like the Jazz looked good at and that was even when they were missing Bogdanovich, and now you got him, who's an electric shooter, and like you said, Mike Conley just coming out and playing like his old self, if you will. I mean, he's looking really good. So yeah, they're hot right now. It's awesome.
All right. Yeah, it is fun to watch. They're fun to watch.
It's nice to have a little bit of a change, you know what I'm saying? Like, rather than like, oh, Lakers are number one and they're still number one and they're gonna stay number one, you know, all that. Like, it's nice to have a little bit of a shakeup.
Well, and I think in the East, it's shaking up a little bit. The Sixers are still number one. They're still playing great.
Yeah.
And that's fun to see them at number one. But I kind of wanted to get into, so it's past a quarter of the way through the season. I wanted to get some updated MVP thoughts on this, Connor. So I don't even remember what we said in the beginning, but who is either. Your MVP
through
the first quarter of the season?
Who is my MVP?
Yeah, through the first quarter.
Ooh. That's somewhat tough, but I think I got to give it to my man, KD, and not just because I'm a fanboy.
They are number two right now. I mean,
they're number two.
He's having a great season. He's having a very similar season to his MVP season.
Yes, and not only his MVP season. I just wanted to go pull it up. This is from Bleacher Report. He's having a similar stat year to when he won MVP. So when he won MVP, he had 32 points per game, 7.4 rebounds, 5.5 assists, and a over 50% field goal percentage. And this year, he's averaging 30.5 points per game, 7.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, and a slightly better field goal percentage at this point. So when he won MVP, it was 50.3, and this year, right so far, it's 51.7. But I believe I thought I sent you another thing too, that he's also having a pretty similar stat line year right now to the same year that Steph Curry won unanimous MVP.
Oh, interesting.
So, but what's interesting is I pulled up the top or the like MVP contenders, like the betting odds or whatever. And right now, Kevin Durant's sitting at number four behind LeBron, Luka, and Joel Embiid.
Dang. Well, that's who I was going to pick. We're just talking about first quarter MVP. Yep. I would pick Embiid.
And that's fair.
I think he's the most dominant big man since Shaq. And he's proven it right now. And he has the Sixers, like I said, number one in the East. They're probably, oh, geez. But yeah, number one in the East, probably what, fifth in the whole league, but still, like, he is dominant. They are dominating the East right now. And he's just, yeah, it's really good. I really like what they've done with the roster, opening it up more, getting more shooters in there. Like, it's helped him out a lot. They still have Ben Simmons who clogs the lane, but right now he's the MVP. And I would probably not pick that to stay the same. I mean, it seems like he always gets injured a little bit. He's probably going to miss some time eventually.
He does have a tough time staying healthy.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, Luka Doncic was a really, really popular pick. And the Mavs have, they haven't been doing great lately.
Yeah.
Like I said, they just lost two in a row to the, what's his name? To the Jazz, talking about him. They stand at 8-12 right now. I think they could turn it around, but it's going to be a hefty job not only turn around, but turn around enough for Luka to win the MVP.
Well, I was going to say, if they can turn it around, it gives Luka, I think, even better odds. But I'm surprised that he's number two on this list. Like, I mean, LeBron's always going to be up there. He's just an animal. Mm-hmm. So, like, I know we've talked about it, and I remember this specifically from back when they were known as the starters. Oh, my gosh. Why can't I think of his name now? Trey?
Trey, yeah.
I can't think of his last name, but anyway, Trey, I keep wanting to say Trey Young. Obviously that's not who it is, but anyway, but I remember Trey always saying, like, you can always throw LeBron into the MVP race. Like, he just is. He's in it every year because he's just that good. But yeah, I was kind of between Embiid and Durant, but I don't know why, but I'm just sticking with it. I mean, maybe that's just my bias because I'm a super Durant fanboy, so like I'm leaning towards him, but I mean, you look at the stats along with it, and now that they're number two, it's looking a lot better. Because I agree with you. I feel like the Sixers have a much greater chance of falling off than the Nets do at this point. And so if the if the Sixers do fall off, KD keeps playing like he is, the Nets take the number one spot and kind of stay there, I think KD's got a really strong case.
I think also I want to mention the Nuggets and Jokic. I think Jokic should be right up there.
He's actually, in terms of odds, sorry, it's just in terms of betting odds, he's right behind Durant at number five.
Yeah. They're at number four right now. They're 11-8, but they had to climb their way up there. They did not have a good start of the season.
Not at all.
They're finally getting healthy, but Jokic is having, I think he's having an MVP season. He's averaging 25-11-8 right now as a center. I just love putting that out.
Yeah, that's true. As shooting, a center.
Shooting 56 from the field and 34 from three. Again, as a big man, that's not that. That's pretty good. 83 free throw. Like he's been crazy, crazy good this year. He's the only reason they were able to stay afloat, and then now, climb up the standing ladders. Now I pulled up his basketball reference page, and I love looking at their nicknames. Obviously, the Joker is number one. That's what a lot of people call him, uh-huh. Joker. Number two, never even heard anybody call him this. Big Honey.
What?
Big Honey. And then number three, I think this is sort of a testament to when he was a little pudgier, is Cookie Monster. I've never heard anybody say that either.
Me neither. All I have to say, Big, what was it, Big Honey?
Big Honey.
Dude, that must have been his stripper name back in the day or something. What?
Big Honey.
Big Honey. Oh my. Okay, so I have to ask you this really quick. You said Embiid is probably the most dominant big man since Shaq. Would you say that, and I don't know who to compare him to, but just in general, would you say that Jokic is the most versatile big man?
Ever? Yes.
Would you say ever?
Yes. I would. I think Jokic, he literally can do anything. He's your point guard at center. And I know centers have done that before. I mean, shout out to the Adrytus Sabonis. I'm Bosch's first name. Shout out to, you know, people have been good. There have been good passing centers. But this dude cannot. He can pass. He can bring up the ball. He can dribble. He can post up. He can shoot a three. He can do it all. I think he is the most skilled big man ever.
To ever lace him up. All right. I like it.
Now, most dominant, though, is different.
No, most dominant is totally different. Yeah. That just came to my mind where you were talking about Embiid is so dominant. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the stat line that you said, and all of Jokic's stats. Yeah. I was like, makes me think he might. Yeah, I think you're on par that he might be the most versatile big man to ever do it.
Because a lot of guys in the past have been able to do one or two of those things. A lot of big men. They've either been a really good shooter and a really good passer, or a really good post up, and a really good, you know, but he literally has it all. And he's amazing. He's averaging 8 assists. I feel like we take this for granted, okay? The revolution of the big man, he's averaging 25-11-8 as a center. Like, that is unheard of.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. He is, if you will, the complete package. He is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, those are the MVP odds. Quarter of the way through the season. Honestly, this season has been pretty fun so far. I'm excited for football to be over so I can focus on basketball.
Can only focus on one thing at a time.
Pretty much.
ADHD monkey.
Yeah. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hey, if you think anybody might like it, please share the podcast with them. Everybody go follow the Two Tight Ends social @2 Tight Ends on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, even on YouTube. And everybody can go follow me @TheThrillCanKill5 on Instagram. Connor, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram @Moco. That's MOCO.CUDE. But yeah, just be sure to follow us at the Two Tight Ends social medias. That's where we'll be posting most of our stuff or sharing funny clips we find on other accounts, things like that.
Yeah, for sure. But Connor, what did we learn today?
Well, if there's anything we've learned today, Neil, it's that when we're talking about trades, whether it's stonks or whether it's sports, we're going to talk about it for way too long.
Amen, brother. And everybody, just remember, GameStop to the moon, baby.
Hold the line, boys.
Hold the line. All right. Till next week, guys.
See ya. Distorted brain.